This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
So this story, which is told a few times in the Quran, is the story of Adam and Hawa. Adam, alayhi salam, and Hawa, alayhi salam, are our parents. These are the two parents of Banu Adam. We're called Banu Adam, which is the children of Adam. And the class today is about children. And how this all started is a really interesting story. How did we get here? Because it's still going on, the story. I mean, this story that happened here, this primal story, is still going on. It's still being played out again and again. And it's in Surah Al-A'raf here. The story is a story about two creatures, Adam and Iblis. And really three, because Hawa is there and she's spoken to in the same with Huma. You know, Allah uses the dual again and again in this story. And they're both very important. And God, Nadahuma, He spoke to the both of them. So He actually spoke to both of these two people. Now, this other character is Iblis. There's a khilaf about Iblis, about his nature. The dominant opinion is that he was a jinn, but he was allowed into the court of the angels, this angelic court. Now, these angels were told by God to bow down to Adam. And that sujood is not a prostration. It's not actually putting your head on the ground. It was a type of ta'zeem, which was more like an inhina. It was bowing. And it could have been sujood, because even prior to the Prophet's mission, there was not a prohibition about making sujood to other people. But the Prophet ﷺ was prohibited from making sujood to anyone else, male or female. That it's haram to actually bow down to any human being with belief. I mean, you shouldn't do it in any case, but you might have to get down to help somebody with their shoe or some. There's a lot of reasons why you could actually do the physical act. So that's not what's haram. What's haram is to actually bow down thinking that those people have any divine quality or anything worthy of that type of exaltation. But we know that some of the Sahaba actually fell down. One prostrated to the Prophet ﷺ, and he forbade him from doing that. But it has to be with the belief, obviously, that it was shirk. So Iblis is told to bow down, and he's the only one that doesn't do it. Because all of them did it, except Iblis. فَسَجِدُوا إِلَّا إِبْلِيسَ. And that's why some of the ulama say the illa, the mustathna here, is the mustathna minhu, is the angels. In other words, the exception, he's accepted from the angels. So in order to be accepted from the angels, it would be that he was an angel also. But in Arabic, they have an interesting thing. You can say all of them, all the men got up except the donkey. In English, we wouldn't really say that. Whereas in Arabic, they have that type of separation between the subject and what's being accepted from it. So it's an interesting debate. But he says, قَالَ مَا مَنَعَكَ أَلَّا تَشْجُدْ. What has hindered you from not falling prostrate? إِذْ أَمَرْتُكَ, because I told you to do this. قَالَ أَنَا خَيْرٌ مِّنْهُ. I'm better than him. Which is a very interesting statement. Because some of the ulama say this is the first wrong action ever. And it's a belief of superiority. It's a belief of superiority of another creature. So he said, I'm better than him. And then, خَلَقْتَنِي مِن نَار. Then he gives the reason. This is his logic of why he is superior. You created me from fire, وَخَلَقْتُهُ مِن طِين. And you created him from earth and water. I'm fire and air, he's earth and water. I'm better than him. What was the superiority here? What superiority did he see? Material, right? It's madda. He's looking at the actual substance of what we are made of. Now, what is unique about Iblis and Adam? That's part of it. But where did that come from? And what did Allah give both Iblis and Adam? They have this conscious ruh. They have this conscious knowledge of God that other creatures don't have, whether they're made of fire, earth, water, whatever they're made of. So Iblis was looking at the outward of the situation and he's saying, I'm better than him. Why are you making me bow down to somebody that I'm better than? This is his logic. And there's a lot of people that fall into that type of reasoning in the world, and it causes immense problems in the world. قَالَ فَأَهْبِطْ. Then go down. Now this is a command to him. مِنْهَا فَمَا يَكُونُ لَكَ أَن تَتَكَبَّرْ فِيهَا. It is not for thee to show pride here. In other words, you're in the divine presence. This isn't the place for pride. If you're aware of God, you can't be in a state of pride. And therefore, he was cast out of this presence because the two can't go together. And then he says, فَخْرُجْ إِنَّكَ مِنَ الصَّاغِرِينَ. Get out of here because you are the صَاغِر. You're not better, you're worse. You're the humiliated one. Because of your pride. Because of your pride, you've put yourself under the thing that you thought you were over. So the actual thinking that you were over this other creature has put you under that creature by default. So go out. And then he says, قَالَ أَنظُرْنِي. أَنظُرْنِي إِلَى يَوْمِ يُبْعَثُونَ. Give me some reprieve. Give me some reprieve. Until the Ba'ath. And this is a proof that Iblis believed in the Ba'ath. He believed in the angels. He believed in Allah, the Qadr. He believed in everything. His kufr is called kufr al-isyan. It's the disbelief of disobedience. Because it's not the same as if you're in the divine presence and you disobey Allah. It's like somebody in Mecca who does something, a kabira in Mecca. It's unimaginable to any person with an ounce of faith in their heart that you could do a kabira, a major wrong action in Mecca. But there are people that do that. So, قَالَ إِنَّكَ مِنَ الْمُنْظَرِينَ. You've got this reprieve. قَالَ فَبِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي. This is really key here. بِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي. Now, because you led me astray. Right? So he's blaming, now he blames Allah. This is the beauty of Iblis. I mean, he's just, that's what Fakhruddin al-Razi says. Look at this foolish intellect. First, he says, why didn't you do it? And he says, because I can't do that, I'm better than him. Then he says, bima ghaytani, you made me go astray by telling me to do it in the first place. Because I couldn't do it, you said do it. And so it's your fault. It's not my fault, it's your fault. See, that's, he's blaming God for his problems. بِمَا أَغْوَيْتَنِي لَقْعُدَنَّ لَهُمْ سِرَاطَكَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. I will now lurk in ambush for them. In other words, these humans. Because it's really their fault. You told me to do this thing. So it's both of your faults. You told me to do something that I couldn't do. And the reason I couldn't do it is because he wasn't worthy of it. So he's got two adversaries here. He's angry at God and he's angry at Adam. And then he says, ثُمَّ لَأَتِيَنَّهُمْ مِنْ بَيْنِ أَيْدِيهِمْ. And I will come upon them from before them. وَمِنْ خَلْفِهِمْ and behind them. وَعَنْ أَيْمَانِهِمْ and to their rights. وَعَنْ شَمَائِرِهِمْ and to their lefts. وَلَا تَجِدُ أَكْثَرَهُمْ شَاكِرِينَ. And you will not find most of them filled with gratitude. So this is important too, because what Iblis has set out to do now is show that they're ingrates. That's what he wants to do. He wants to show God that you made a mistake. You shouldn't have made him the Khalifa, the Caliph on earth. And you're going to see that they're not going to be grateful for what you've given them in the first place. This is what he wants to do. Now, what's interesting, Ibn al-Hajj mentions that when he says, I'll come before them, behind them, to their right, to their left, he didn't mention two directions. So he's got four directions, right? And there's six directions. There's the zenith, the nadir, and then the four cardinal directions. He says he'll come on all those four cardinal directions, but he won't come from above or below. He didn't say, وَلَا أَتِيَنُّ مِنْ فَوْقِهِمْ وَمِنْ تَحْتِهِمْ. I won't come from over them or below them. The reason that the commentators say that is because what comes from above is revelation. And as long as you have a connection with God, he doesn't have access to that. He can't cut you off from God unless you cut yourself off. And he can't come from under because that's a place of humility. And he's arrogant. He wouldn't put himself under you. So you being humble, that's why, when does shaitan flee according to the hadith? When you're in sajda. Because he can't bear that. Humility before God. And so it's very interesting, this story, because what it's telling us is that if you place God in his right position and you place yourself in your right position, which is that you see God over you and you're under, in prostration, in this state of submission, shaitan has no access. But as long as you're wandering around in this horizontal field, not in a vertical state, right? Because the vertical is up, down. Horizontal is looking around on this plane. It's the material plane. It's two dimensions. You're not allowing for that vertical plane, and so you're lost. You're lost. And the whole point of being upright is that you are vertical on a horizontal plane. If you go horizontal, right, lie down on the job, then he gets in there. That's why it's very easy for him, especially sleep is a really easy time. If you don't do wudu, you don't do those things. I mean, those are all hadiths about that. And then Allah again, قَالَ خُرُجْ مِنْهَا مَذْءُومًا مَدْحُورًا. He banished them again, degraded, banished. And then he says that whoever follows you, لَمَنْ تَبِعَكَ مِنْهُمْ لَأَمْلَأَنَّ جَهَنَّمَ مِنْكُمْ أَجْمَعِينَ. I'm going to fill Jahannam with them. Those people that follow you, you're their imam. And you're headed to that place, so you're going to take them with you. So if you take him as an imam, that's where he's taking you. And then it says, after that, Ya Adam. Now he goes, speaks to Adam, who's the Khalifa, who just, the angels were told to bow down to him. He says, Ya Adam, O Adam, Uskun anta wa zawjuka, go live, you and your wife, al-jannata, in this paradise. Fakula min haythu shi'tuma, and eat from whence you will, wherever you want. Wala taqraba hadhihi shajara, but don't go near this tree over here. Fatakuna min al-zalimin, because you will transgress by doing that. So here's all the boundaries and here's the hudud. Those are called the hudud. This is what the beautiful hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ says, Al-halal, inna al-halal bayyinun wa al-haram bayyinun wa baynahuma umurun mushtabihat. That halal is clear, haram is clear. What's permitted, what's prohibited, it's all clear. And between them are these gray matters. So he's basically told, everything here is for you except this one thing. Don't go there. And he tells him, if you go there, you'll be from the wrongdoers, the ظَلَمَ. تَظْلِمُ نَفْسَكُ وَتَظْلِمُ حَقَّ اللَّهِ. You not only wrong yourselves, but you wrong the right of Allah. You don't harm Allah. You can't do anything to Allah. But you can transgress a haqq, what is due to Allah. And what is due is that Allah is obeyed if he tells you to do something. Now, at this point it says, فَوَسْوَسَ لَهُمَ الشَّيْطَانِ. So shaitan came and he waswasa. Now, if you know, this is a type of word that actually sounds like the action. The Arabs have some words that sound like the action. Animapateic, I think they call it in English. Like buzz. Buzz is one of those words in English. It sounds like a bee buzzing. This word is, waswasa is to whisper. You can even hear it in English, whisper. I mean, it's similar, maybe even a cognate if you get back far enough. فَوَسْوَسَ لَهُمَا. Shaitan waswasa lahuma. Now waswasa lahuma, the Arabs say waswasa ilayhi, waswasa lahuma. Waswasa lahuma is different from waswasa ilayhi. If you said waswasa ilayhi, it means shaitan whispered to them. But when you say waswasa lahuma, it's that he did it because of something. In other words, he had some goal here. Fa waswasa lahuma. He whispered to them for a reason. And the amazing thing about whispering is whenever somebody lowers their voice to a whisper, it's always a very interesting moment. Because why? What changed that they didn't want somebody to hear something or they're worried? I just want to tell you. I mean, there's something going on with a whisper that's very interesting. It's like you'll be intimate because you love somebody, things like that. And that's, again, because you don't want anybody to hear. It's just for the, it's for your ears only, right? That's a lover's whisper. But here, there's another type of whisper. And there's even what's called khiyanat al-uyun. The Arabs call it khiyanat al-uyun, which is when the king or some person in charge, I mean, there's plenty of Arab rulers now that probably are very good at this. It's looking with your eye that indicates to the others, get rid of him. And you see it a lot in, you know, it's kind of a Shakespearean motif. You know, he looks at him and you know what to do. And then you know that's it for that person, right? They don't come back in the play. So this is what he's up to. He's got this, فَوَسْوَسَ لَهُمَ الشَّيْطَانِ لِيُبْدِيَ لَهُمَا. Now, there's a difference about this lamb, and this is one of the things about tafsir. Some people say that that lamb is lamb al-ta'qib, or lamb al-aqiba, or the lamb of sayrura, the Arabs call it, which is a lamb that's used, like if you look, how does he translate it here in the English? He says, then Satan whispered to them that he might manifest unto them that which was hidden. In other words, he did it for that reason. That is not the opinion of some of the Mufassirun. They say the lamb is actually like the lamb in the Quran about Al-Fir'aun. It says, فَالْتَقَطَهُ آلُ فِرْعَوْنَ آلُ فِرْعَوْنَ when they took Musa لِيَتَّخِذَهُ لِيَكُونَ لَهُمْ عَدُوًا وَحُزْنًا. That they took Musa, and then it says لِيَكُونَ لَهُمْ. And it looks like in order for him to be an enemy for them and to be a source of grief. Well, that's obviously they didn't do that for that reason. So the lamb there is, but that's what happens because of doing that. So this lamb here could either mean that he did it in order to do that, or it means that that was the result of him doing it. فَوَسْوَسَدَهُمْ لِيُبْدِيَهُمْ. That in order to show them, or, and this resulted in them seeing, right? لِيُبْدِيَ لَهُمَا مَا وُرِيَ عَنْهُمَا. That which was hidden from them. Min sawatihima, from their nakedness. Now, so'a in Arabic, the Arabs call private parts the so'a. And the reason they do that is because kashfuhu yasu'uhu, that if it's exposed, he feels shame. Now, what's interesting is that there's a belief amongst most of the scholars that the so'a, this desire to cover the nakedness, is fitrah. Which is why the vast majority of Aboriginal people cover their private parts. There are very, very few human beings on the planet that go around naked. And even the ones that do will tend to do something. I mean, even if you look at these Aboriginal peoples in South America, they tend to cover or they strap or they do something because it's part of the fitrah of doing this. And it always fascinates me, these books in evolution, where they'll show the monkey, and then at a certain point, he's wearing a garment. And you just wonder why he did that. So at a certain point, he thought, you know, I should cover this part of me. What made him do that? Right? I mean, you can look in those books. I always wondered about that, you know, because suddenly it's a Cro-Magnon man or something like that, and he's wearing, you know, a little skimpy thing around there. It's not like he's suddenly in a tuxedo or, I mean, he's just progressed to that stage of being aware of his nakedness. And this is the point of this story, is that he became aware of his nakedness. Now, some of the ulama say that they had garments of light and that's what was removed. That they were in a state of just such intense purity that their whole bodies were veiled in this light. And you can have a situation where you actually can, that happens, you can see somebody in a type of, they call it a hala, the Arabs call it a hala. In English they call it a halo. You often see like Byzantine, these icons of these Byzantine I mean, where do they get that concept from if there wasn't some experience of that somehow, this idea of this body of light that can actually surround somebody? I mean, I was telling one of my boys, we were leaving one day and we did a dua in the car, and I said, that dua is for protection. And he said, how does it protect you? And I said, well, if you do it, you're recognizing that you're in need of God's protection. And just that recognition alone, God will put this protection around you for that reason. And he said, oh, so is it like a bubble of light that goes around you? And I said, that sounds good. And then, وَقَالَ مَا نَهَاكُمْ رَبُّكُمَا عَنْ هَذِهِ الشَّجَرَةِ إِلَّا أَن تَكُونَ مَلَكَيْنِ أَوْ تَكُونَ مِنَ الْخَالِدِينَ. The only reason, see, this is now his waswasa. Now, the interesting thing about the waswasa also is the only authority, according to the Quran, that shaitan has is suggestion. So he's an ad man. He's a pitch man. He can't make you buy something. He can only suggest that you buy it. Now, according to the commentators, they said that he did not win the first time. This was actually a continuous thing. He kept harping. He kept coming back to Adam, which is what the ad man does. He doesn't come once. He comes again and again. It's unrelenting until finally, maybe I'll just try it. Because you've seen so many commercials and they put all this enticement, and or they called and said, if you buy it, you get this or something. And there's all these ways in which people are enticed into doing things that they might not normally do. And this is what he did. Now he says to them, the only reason your Lord told you not to do that is because he didn't want you to be among the angels, to be two angels, or to be those who have khulud. Now, the ulama say about this, there's a couple of opinions. One of them is shaitan, that this was like the blurb, the slogan. It was an enticement, but it didn't affect Adam alayhi salam or his wife, because first of all, they knew that the angel, they were over the angels. Because Adam, the angels had bowed down to Adam. So it wasn't that this was something that they were going to become. And Ibn Abbas actually read it, takuna melikain, that you will be two kings. So making you like kings. And there's a verse in the Quran in which he says that, أَلَا أَدُلُكُمْ عَلَى مُلْكٍ. Can I show you a dominion that doesn't dissipate? So Iblis is in trying to entice him with the idea of dominion or this mulk, which would strengthen that reading of Ibn Abbas. And that's also one of the difficulties. It's an ishkal in the verse about the malakani from Babel, Harut and Marut, because some of them, these are almost, they're actually teaching people evil, and they warn people about it. So it's kind of like a negative type of revelation. It's something being revealed to people, but it's actually negative. And there's a difference of opinion about what those madakeni were. So he attempts to entice him with this, and then says, "Wamin al khalidin." And khulud in Arabic does not necessarily mean to go on forever. Khalid means makithun limudda, right? And that's why there's even a khilaf. I mean, it's not a strong one, but there is an opinion about the khulud finnar. Ibn Taymiyyah, in one of the transmissions that came from him, he did not believe that the fire went on forever. And he thought that it just went on for a period of time. But the abadan generally means khadidina fiha abada, you know. And abad is, I think abide might even be from that word, abide. Because it's similar, it's almost the same meaning, to abide, to continue on in some place. وَقَاسَمُهُمَا. And then he swore to them. Now the word here, qasama, is for musharaka. In Arabic you have fa'ala. So what happened was he told them, أُقْسِمْ بِاللَّهِ. He swore by God. And this is shaitan. See, that Shakespeare says, you know, there's a scene in The Merchant of Venice where Shylock, he's telling him about usury, how it's prohibited in the Bible. And Shylock mentions about Jacob and his ewes and how he loaned them to his neighbor, and the ewes had, they had gave birth, and then when he got them back, he wanted all of them back. And he said, that's the same thing, basically. And so you know, the merchant's friend tells him, you know, watch out, even the devil can quote scripture. So the idea here is, you know, watch out, because shaitan can tell a lie about God, right? And this is what he's doing. Qasamahum. So he said, billahi, you know, by Allah, I'm telling you the truth. And they said, atuqsimu billah, do you swear by Allah? Because what did the jinn say? وَإِنَّا ظَنَنَّا أَلَّنْ يَقُرِ الْإِنسُ وَالْجِنُّ عَلَى اللَّهِ كِذِبًا. We never thought the jinn or ins, these are jinn. We didn't think jinn or ins would tell a lie about God. So he's saying, uqsimu billah. This, some of the ulama say, is what fooled Adam. Because he did not believe that Iblis would lie about God. So because what does he say? He says, inni lakuma lamina nasihin. Now, in balagha, in Arabic rhetoric, when you say inni aqulu hadha, you're saying it li mutaraddid, somebody who's doubting, he doesn't know. Maybe you really mean that, or maybe you don't. So when you say inni, this is somebody who's doubting you. So when you use this, it's called tawkid, it's a type of emphatic. When you use this emphatic, what you're saying is, I know you doubt me, but I'm telling you the truth. But when you use a lam the second time, inni lakuma la minan nasihin. He didn't say minan nasihin, la minan nasihin. That's for somebody who doesn't believe you. So you're using it to say, I am swearing to the utmost that I'm telling the truth. I mean, that's the language he's using. In other words, believe me, I'm being sincere. I'm telling you, please believe me. Now here's two people that they don't even know what a lie is, because they're in that pure state. And they're hearing this creature saying, billahi, by God. So they believed him. Now, some of the scholars say, where was Iblis? Was he in paradise? Because he was kicked out. Say, some of the ulama say, this is actually on earth, this was taking place. That the Jannah here is not another worldly Jannah, was actually part of, it was Aden, it was the Eden on the earth. And كُلُّن يَدَّعِي وِصَالَ لَيْلَ وَلَيْلَ لَا تَقْرُّ لَهُمْ بِذَاكِ. Everybody claims Layla for themselves. The Sri Lankans say that it was there. The Native Americans here thought it was on Mount Diablo. So everybody kind of has their version of where these first people were. So then, and then he led them astray, فَدَلَّمُهُمَا بِغُرُورٍ. So he did this with guile. غَرَّهُمْ. غُرُور is when you're deceived by somebody, right? The Romans used to say, buyer beware. That the onus is on the one purchasing something to not be deceived. That was in Roman law. That was in Islamic law. It's actually similar to modern law, is that it's actually the seller is responsible. So if you cheat somebody, it's a reason to get your money back. And that's actually Islamic law, but that was not Roman law. So if you sold a house and you knew it had termites and everything, and you didn't tell them, you know, in Islamic law, any type of aib, a fault that's hidden, is not. So that's ghurur, right? They call it bi'r gharar, when you sell something where there's a trick to it. Like you sell somebody a house, and then you find out that, you know, it's like you're in Belgium, and they don't tell you there's squatters in there, and the squatter law is that you can't kick them out. فَلَمَّا ذَاقَ الشَّجَرَةَ بَدَتْ لَهُمَّ سَوْأَتُهُمَّ. So when they tasted the tree, right, meaning of the tree, بَدَتْ لَهُمَّ, their nakedness appeared to them, right, or their shame. وَطَفِقَ يَخْصِفَانِ, and then they began to, عَلَيْهِمَا مِنْ وَرَقِ الْجَنَّةِ, they started sewing together these leaves, like covering, putting them over themselves. And their Lord called them, وَنَادَاهُمَا رَبُّهُمَا. And this is not any type of anthropomorphic. Don't think that there's a voice coming into the... It's not anything anthropomorphic. I mean, you can't... بِلَا تَشْبِيهِ وَلَا تَعْطِيلِ. You know, don't think this is a voice like voices. But, I mean, they were called. And the ulama differ about how that actually occurred. But it's not like a voice that, you know, you hear with your ear. أَلَمْ أَنْهَاكُمَا. عَنْ تِلْكُمَا الشَّجَرَةِ Didn't I tell you not to go near that tree? And then, وَأَقُلْ لَكُمَا And didn't I tell you, إِنَّ الشَّيْطَانَ لَكُمَ عَدُوٌ مُبِينٌ I warned you about shaitan. قَالَ رَبَّنَا ظَلَمْنَا أَنفُسَنَا Oh, our Lord, we have wronged ourselves. Now, this is very important in this story because this is the exact opposite reaction of shaitan. Shaitan blamed the other. Shaitan blamed God for his problems. See, they didn't say, look, you told us not to eat it, and then you made it so tempting, and we couldn't resist. So it's really your fault. See, that's what Shaitan did, basically. He said, it's really your fault. Or they didn't say, which is the biblical narration, we didn't do it, the devil made us do it. They took full responsibility. Now, if you're going to have a ruler, what is the one quality that you want? I mean, what is the Arabic word? Do you know what the Arabic word for the man in charge is? Mas'ul. The one who will be asked. In other words, if you want somebody to be in charge of something, they have to be ready to say, it's my fault. They can't say, the king can't say, look, when the populace is all at the castle, it's all Cardinal Richelieu's fault. You know, he did everything. Well, who put him in charge? You did. So what's happening here is taking responsibility. And then, وَإِن لَمْ تَغْفِرْ لَنَا وَتَرْحَمَنَا لَنَكُنَنَّ مِنَ الْخَاسِرِينَ If you don't forgive us and show mercy on us for our wrong, we will be from those in complete loss. Right? So this, now they're ready for khilafah. This was really the test. Right? This was the test, and they showed themselves worthy to be khulafa, to be those who can stand as the vice regents of the divine on the earth. So what are they taught? قَالْ اِهْبِطُوا بَعْضُكُمْ لِبَعْضُ Go down. In other words, descend now. Take your role as this khalifa. And then some of you enemies to others. Now, in the biblical narration, it's this idea of that there's this animosity towards the men and women, that she caused the problems and it's all her fault and that. And that's nowhere here. The enemy here is Iblis. وَلَكُمْ فِي الْأَرْضِ مُسْتَقَرٌ وَمَتَاعٌ إِلَى حِينٍ And you have in the earth a habitation, a place where you can have qarar, have this period of time, and provision for a while. مَتَاعٌ إِلَى حِينٍ And then they're told, قَالَ فِيهَا تَحْيَوْنَ In it you'll live, وَفِيهَا تَمُوتُونَ وَمِنْهَا تُخْرَجُونَ وَتَخْرُجُونَ In another riwayah. You will live in it, you will die in it, and you will be brought forth from it, or come forth from it. يَا بَنِي Adam. Now, O children of Adam. See, here, now we're all being addressed. We've been told who our parents are, where we came from, how this whole thing began, and now here we all are. يَا بَنِي Adam. لَا يَفْتِنَنَّكُمَ الشَّيْطَانِ Don't let shaitan do to you what was done to your parents. In other words, learn the lesson of what happened before you. And this is, the Arabs say, السَّعِيدُ مَنَ التَّعَظُ بِغَيْرِهِ The one who is felicitous is the one that learns the lessons of other people. They don't have to prove those lessons for themselves. Right? I mean, this is the idea that those who don't know history are condemned to repeat it. Right? That if you don't know what happened, then so this is why we're being told this story, is that there is on the earth, there is this struggle that is going on. And the struggle deals with, there are two components in the struggle. Your desire. Because if you didn't desire the thing in the first place, then nobody could convince you to even try it. So you have this thing called hawa, which is your desire, and then there's an element working in the world which is suggesting to you to explore that hawa, to test it, to try it. Dhawq, dhaqa. They just They dhaqa, in another one it says akala minha, they ate from it, but the dhaqa means that's all they ate. It was just a little try to see what it was like. And this is it. But they made tawbah. The danger is that you continue to go on this path. And some people say that you can't, you are never free from a wrong truly unless you've done it and made tawbah. Because if you haven't done it, it's always open to, you don't know the horrible experience that follows the wrong. I mean, this is the idea of crime and punishment is, you know, the man kills this woman because he was a nihilist, but then he has to live with the crime for his whole life, and that is the punishment. And that's why the atonement is what removes that suffering. I had this class in ethics when I was in the university, and it said, religion creates the very problem that it solves. Right? This was a book by a man called Chittister, Ethics in Action or something like that. Religion creates the very problem it solves. It makes people feel bad, and then it gives them ways to remove that feeling. Well, again, the question is, it's chicken and egg. Why did they feel bad in the first place? Who could have convinced them of that? I mean, there had to be that moral component in there in the first place. Why do people feel bad? Why did Helen Keller, when she had that extraordinary event, when she realized the symbols, why did she feel bad about breaking the doll of her teacher? Why do children feel bad if they do something bad? Where is that coming from? There's a component in the human being that needs atonement, that needs to come back. And that's the whole foundation. It is the foundation of religion, but it wasn't the religion that was invented to create that. It was the religion that was given to human beings to remove that so that you don't have to suffer. I mean, that's the point. I mean, in Christianity, it's the idea of Christ. For us, it's Toba. Because Adam, you see, in Christianity, the belief is that through carnal knowledge, if you want to go Augustine's route, through carnal knowledge, Adam's sin caused everyone to sin. So you're all born into this sin, and the only way the sin can be removed is through this redeemer, somebody, the scapegoat, who dies for you, which was a common motif in ancient peoples. They used to, in the year, they'd have a festival, and they'd take a goat or a lamb or something, and everybody would put their sins on that goat, and then they'd go sacrifice it, and they'd all feel good. That was a way of atoning, right? And the actual, in the Jewish tradition, they had that, the scapegoat. In Islam, you just say, Astaghfirullah. You do exactly what Adam alayhi salam did. Admit your mistake. That's the first thing. Zalamna anfusana. Just admit it. I was wrong. That's the first thing, right? Is to have nadama, remorse. And then ask forgiveness. In lam taghfir lana wa tarhamna. Right? If you don't forgive us and have mercy on us, we're lost. So in other words, have mercy and forgive us. That's all you have to do. That is the covenant that we have with God, is that if you ask for forgiveness after admitting you're wrong and feeling remorse, He promises to forgive it. As simple as that. There's nothing else. There's no other problem. And that is it. And then he says, Ya bani Adam, qad anzalna alaykum libasan yuwari sawatikum wa rishan wa libasu taqwa dhalika khayru khayrun dhalika min ayati Allahi la'allahum yadhakkarun. This, O children of Adam, we have revealed unto you a raiment or a garment, right, that conceals your shame. And also warisha, and it's also beautiful, and which is a sign, khudu zinatukum inda kulli masjid, why, you know, humans ornament their clothes, because it's not just the covering, it's why they put designs on things. I mean, a pillow has a function, but there's a reason why they do all this stuff. And that's part of being human, is this aesthetic desire to beautify what's around us, because Allah has put in this, in the human being, this love for beauty. And this is what he's saying is, he said, I sent down you clothes, but also risha. I sent down you this desire to make them beautiful. And so that's part of what Allah has given us, this desire to have them beautiful. And then, wadibas al-taqwa, there's two riwayah. Nafi' reads it, wadibas al-taqwa, mansub, that it's actually ma'atuf, you know, it follows, we've given you this clothes and ornaments, and also the garment of taqwa we gave you also. And then you go, when it says dharika khayrun, it starts a new sentence. That and that, all of that is good. And then there's another reading, which is libasu taqwa, which starts a new sentence. Libasu taqwa khayrun, you know, dharika khayrun. But libasu taqwa, and then dharika is badal for people that know the grammar. The libasu taqwa, dharika khayrun, right? In other words, libasu taqwa is better than all that. All that you're wearing. Don't, in other words, don't get too obsessed with the outward. Don't think as long as I look good outwardly, I'm all right. And look at the world and its obsession with appearance. One of them said, if your soul is not good and all you are concerned about, one of the Arab poets, he said, if all you're concerned about is your outward appearance and your soul is destitute, then you're like a candle over the grave of a fire worshiper. It's a beautiful thing, but in other words, it's not worth anything because it's not a god. Fire is not a god. And so this outward appearance, and the Prophet said, Ta'isan li abd al-qamis wa abd al-dinar wa dirham wa abd al-qamis wa al-khamisa, that how wretched is the slave of his clothes. And there's people, this is, I mean, one of the things about the world, you know, you could look at the world in a lot of ways. The world is like, I mean, to use a really crude metaphor, you can look at the world almost like there's television stations and people have been watching a certain station their whole life. They've been in a room and they're just watching this television station and they think that's all that's on. And then somebody comes in, they don't know from where they came, but they just come in and they take the remote off the thing. Haven't you tried this? And then click, there's another station. And it's like, oh, there's a whole other thing here, and then click another one. And it's like what people get into is they get into certain types of stations, like lust is a television station. And it really is out there. They have those. That lust is a television station. Is that it's like that's all that people fall into is just lust, the appetites of the pleasures of flesh. And then also the you know those stations where the people come with the clothes. They have one in Europe where they just show clothes 24 hours a day. And that's a station. So it's like people can just watch clothes and that becomes the station. Or jewelry. There's these jewelry stations. They just show you and that's all it is. You know, it's just more ornaments, you know. Or there's action and drama stations because there's people that love and that's what they're every person they meet they get in an argument with. Every relationship they get into, it's always drama, you know, because they're on the action drama station. And then there's the political intrigue station, right? And so there's all these worlds you can get into. It's all out there. And you can just turn. But then somebody comes in and says, why are you watching that? There's a whole world out there. What? You mean there's something else on? No, it's not make-believe. It's real, right? But see, if you've always been watching that TV, you know, it's like these little kids that are just staring. They don't realize there's a world out there. They don't realize they can actually go out and have more fun at the creek playing or playing ball or doing running around jump. They don't because they're totally glued into, and that's what ghafla is. Heedlessness is being in that state where you think there's nothing else but this. And that's why people can do great wrong actions like fornicate because at the moment that's all there is. Or steal. That's all there is. There's that object and I want it and there's nothing else. And that's why people do the worst things. It's why they can kill. Because at that time, that's the only station there is. There's nothing else. But this idea of libasu taqwa is that there's this other raiment that God's given you. It's not the outward raiment. It's the inward garment that protects your soul. So you begin to actually be concerned not about all this stuff out here, but about this heart that you've got in here that you were told to protect. يَوْمَ لَا يَنْفَعُ مَالٌ وَلَا بَنُونَ إِلَّا مَنْ أَتَى اللَّهَ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ. On the day when nothing benefits them, not wealth, not children, nothing, except those who come with a pure heart, a sound heart. So then it becomes, I have to get through this life with my heart intact. And the thing about the heart is that the heart hardens literally and metaphysically. It has, there's a physical hardening of the heart that comes from overeating. or consuming the wrong foods. And then there's an actual spiritual hardening of the heart, which comes from indulging in one's desires.
This complete